This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to Pacific Soul with Melissa Macon on ABC Radio Australia.
Leadership can come in unexpected ways, sometimes through quiet calling, sometimes through sudden loss. When Pastor Susan Kingle's husband died, she was thrust into a leadership role she'd never expected, becoming a pastor by circumstance. Susan lost three quarters of the congregation as some members left to start new ministries, unwilling to be led by a woman. But she remained steadfast, and with that was left a church where she earned respect as a capable leader. So what does it mean for Pacific women when they step into church leadership roles that were once closed to them? And how are they reshaping the ways that we practice faith? Pastor Susan Kingle from PNG speaking to the ABC's Hilda Wayne.
I call myself a pastor by circumstance because my husband died suddenly and there was no one to take over the ministry. It wasn't a church network like COC or AOG or Lutheran or something like that. It was a ministry we initiated and we incorporated. When my husband died suddenly, there was no one to take over. The children were still young, so I had to take the place of the pastor. That's why I sometimes call myself a pastor by circumstance.
How did your life change after you took on the ministry? What challenges especially did you face as a widow and a woman?
Some of the challenges that I faced as a woman, especially with the church leadership that stood with my late husband, some of them decided to leave because they were like on the fence whether I would do it or I might not do it in the same way as my late husband. So some of them, they left, and even my assistant pastor was the assistant pastor when my late husband was running the ministry. He also left with three quarters of the congregation. These were some challenges that come my way, but I kept going until this is my 13th year in ministry.
How did you feel about them leaving, and how did you respond and actually find the strength to continue on the ministry?
The people that were in the ministry we didn't bring them into the ministry. It is God who brought them into the ministry. So it is up to them and their God when to move. I see the church as it is an institution, just like a school or a college, something where people just come and attend service, and whenever they want to move, they can move.
And how did you manage to prove yourself as a leader?
When my assistant pastor and some of the congregation, when they wanted to leave, I just said, I prayed for them and gave them some money and said, you're going to start your own ministry. So myself and those that want to remain, they can remain. But I didn't take that as a setback. I still said, whether you go or stay, I will still serve God, even if I am left with my four children. So that's how we came. And those that who stood by me, they are still there to this day. So we have a congregation members of not more than 50.
You and I both come from a patriarchal society where women actually take the back seat in most decision-making in the community. And they are not given opportunities such as the blessing seeing or leading, visibly leading. Do you think Christianity and the religion itself added more pressure being a woman in the church?
In our culture, we are treated that way. But in the church, when I took leadership, they saw me as a leader, regardless of whether I was a male or female. So whatever I say, they just work with me to benefit humanity in the church.
But still, there are still not many women who are taking leadership roles in the church like yourself in Papua New Guinea or the Pacific. Why do you think there are so few women leaders in the church?
We can write policies to change the mindset of the people, but it is already inbuilt in them to think that women are not able to do it. So in order to change the mindset, I always tell women, you don't need to fight for it. You just be yourself. Wherever you are placed in your area of influence, whether you be the manager in a shop or in a company, you're the CEO, you just be yourself and serve. And they know that it is the woman leading, but you don't have to do something to show yourself that you are a woman.
And going back to your congregation and before your late husband passed away, of the people who remained in your church, were there more women? And what do you think, those who stayed, what do you think made them want to stay?
We had five elderly men who were with their wives and children. They remained with me. And the others left, but they didn't discourage me. Because our ministry is not a church-building ministry. It's a soul-winning ministry, meaning that we are based in Lae, but we go throughout the country hosting conferences and crusades. And if people are saved by the preaching of the word, we counsel them and then we tell the churches that are existing in that community to look after them, and then we move on. We only have one church where we are based, and that is in Lae.
And are cultural attitudes towards women in leadership roles changing?
I think it's changing. Like in the church, they used to say, we have a meeting hall, and they address as the pastors, the male pastors, as men of God. But now in Lae City, when they want to say men of God, they also say woman of God, because I am in that pastoral role. So they include me in the meetings as well. We call it Lae Ministers Fraternal, where we pastors meet, and they used to say all the men of God, but now this time they say men and women of God, because I am there.
And being a mom and a wife to your husband, who has done so much, who's been so popular because he was the first televangelist, if I'm not wrong, televangelist in Papua New Guinea, and being a wife and a mom, how did you actually manage being a mom and then taking on this huge ministry after your husband passed away?
When my late husband was alive, he was doing a lot of admin work, organizing crusades, and that, like, he was in the ministry. While I was taking care of the house, the children, minding the children, taking them to school, bringing them back. And from time to time, when there was a crusade, I just go and help the admin team to get things organized. But most of the times, I am in the house serving the children. But as soon as he died, there was no one to take over. The pastors in the city prayed for me, and they said, you'll be the next person to take over the ministry. So it was a big difference from the house to the office. But I told my team, I will not be like my late husband, Joseph Kingal, but I am Susan Kingal. So you adjust to the change. That's what I told them. So those that did not want to adjust to the change, they left. It's always like that in every organization. When they change of leadership, some people leave and some people stay, and they make their own decisions.
What are some of the personal highlights in your life journey taking on over the ministry?
The highlights, what do you mean by highlights? Okay. With my late husband, We have gospel crusades in open air crusades for like outreach as a tool for outreach for salvation of souls, because he's an evangelist. And from the start of the, when he died, soon after he died, I tried to do the same, but then I saw that I disturbed my children from going to school. So I said, oh, we'd put the crusade aside, we'll put it on hold at this time, and will let me, I cannot hold crusades at the expense of my children's education. That's what I said. And we were running conferences for youth and students around the country.
That was Pastor Susan Kingle from PNG speaking there to the ABC's Hilda Wayne.
You're listening to Pacific Soul with Melissa Macon on ABC Radio Australia.
Growing up in the Anglican community as a Samoan, Sonia Hunter's early experiences planted seeds that would later shape her unique path from tourism CEO to ordained priest. But choosing to leave a secure career behind, she stepped into ministry not just in a role, but as a response to a deeper calling to nurture and to lead. She's speaking here with the ABC's Hilda Wayne once again.
Women in the Pacific, we would always look. There are times we go through so many experiences, whether it's in government or whether it's in business community, you're always longing for that. What is it that fills the void? You can do so many things, but you still think, no, there's something more that I need to do. And I think that's what I found in the church, was a purpose that I wanted to continue my life. Because I think when I left government, I was heading to becoming 55 the next year. And when we reach this kind of age and we had served in the church and we are enjoying the peace of God, I think it's then that we look at really fulfilling the role of nurturing as Jesus had called us to look after the sheep. And I think that's one of the areas that I enjoyed at that time. And I thought, this is it. This is where I want to go. We all look for that, for the great pasture as we continue our journey. And also because all us women have had experiences throughout our lives, and that we try as much as possible to learn from our experiences and look towards a really good purpose, if I can say that, and be able to influence others and nurture others and do whatever we need to do in order to direct their lives or influence them in a good way, so that at least to go home to our real home, we would have done something good and leave something good in this world. And through our journey too, we as women have to work three times as hard in order to make it in the secular world. And it's always the Bible that we turn to. It's the Word of God that nurtures us through the different knocks in life, whether it's there, we carry our hurts and pains along with us. And it's only God that can give us peace or heal the hurts. And I felt that it would be good to use that in the ministry.
Do you think it's a natural fit for women to lead congregations?
Of course it is. And that's why I really thank the Anglican Church. If you look at the Anglican Church, has in the way that its structure and framework that the Anglican Church have, its outreach is to ensure that everyone is in the body of Christ. And so we have our Association of Anglican Women, we have our Mothers Union, but also we Anglican women can become priests because it is natural for us to be able to nurture. I think if you look at the Anglican Church also, very progressive in the sense that there are women priests. It's not as common in other churches. Priests also, our male priests also are able to marry, have wives, nurture children, and so forth. The Bible says, he who finds a wife finds a good thing, but also that we know very well, all good things happen to those who love the Lord and are called according to His purpose. And we women are called. So it's really good. So we have men who have championed us women to be great servants of God. But also on the other side, we also have women who give us great examples to lead.
And Sonia, what impact does having women leaders in the church have upon that fight to end violence against women or any issues at all that impact women in society generally?
We are women. We know what it is to be a girl and to be a woman. There's so many challenges within the church, within the community, because we're talking about us being a three-part being as God had created us. First, there is our mind, and then our soul, or rather our mind, our body, and then our spirit. Now, with the body, you can see the effects. We're hurt. But with the mind and the spirit, yes, we can be educated, we can be aware of things that are happening, but we must be able to reach out and say, we want to be educated. And so we carry that out in the Pacific. We educate our girls, we educate our people. But when it comes to the spiritual side, often enough, that's a side of the three-part being that's often starved because we can't see it. So we lead people to church. We lead people to the community to worship together, faith-based community, to say, this is what God says. But in the Anglican Church has always been progressive in everything. I am proud and love where I worship and being an Anglican because we talk openly, which is one of the things that we often say in the prevention of violence, is that the reason why it happens is because we're very silent. And we have to promote dialogue, conversations, coming out, telling their story. Because once that is told, then people can actually work on ensuring that the violence stops, that the gender-based violence is stopped, that equity is there, policy is established. So more talking, but also being able to speak with our own leaders to establish better laws, not only in that covers the church, but also the country as a whole.
That was Sonia Hunter, whose faith and leadership have shaped her journey from the Anglican youth groups into ordained ministry.
You're listening to Pacific Soul with Melissa Makin on ABC Radio Australia.
Well, thrust into motherhood as a teenager and facing the challenges of migration, Tongan Reverend Carissa Sully worked tirelessly to build a life for her family in Australia. Answering a deep calling as well, she left a successful corporate career to lead the Uniting Church and became its youngest and first person of colour to be the president in 2024.
Growing up in a Pacifica family home, we're born into the church. We're not even speaking and running yet, and your parents take you to church anyway. So there was never a time where I dreamt of becoming a minister, but I do remember so clearly the moment where I felt a call, I guess a call or a vocation from God. And it was actually at a cross-cultural gathering where for the first time, or maybe I just hadn't noticed in the past, but for the first time for me attending this gathering, I saw cultural diverse leaders speaking from the front, and particularly migrant Pacifica women who were Reverend Doctors or leading Bible study, speaking from the front. Like, they weren't in the kitchen, they were leading at this event. So that captured my eye, and attending this event opened my eyes to the possibility for a woman to lead in the life of the church. So that was the moment for me. And it's interesting, you said in different exchanges we've had, you mentioned you've spoken to Seth Rosa Carroll. It was actually the Reverend Dr. Sifresa Carroll, she was one of the Bible study leaders. And I remember sitting at the back going, wow, she's a Pacific woman, a minister. It's, I'd never seen Pacifica women leading from the front. And she actually was like my turning point. And she doesn't know, though, maybe she knows that now, but I remember at that time, she had no idea how much she impacted my life. And leaving that event, I began to explore my call to ministry and continued on from there. Okay, Lord, I believe I'm called to be a minister. Let's see where this journey takes me. But I feel like knowledge is power. And because I was still a young mum trying to figure out life myself, as I grew in my own academic study, I began to see a bit more clearly the inequality across genders or even racism in the church. But I think that would be for any institution, not just a religious institution. I think there's also ageism is an issue that I see. And there definitely has been lots of other examples I can, or lots of other experiences I have had in terms of challenging the status quo and bringing a voice that may be different to the dominant culture. But I believe in the Uniting Church, we've always had opportunity to dala noa and to continue to try and create spaces where we can engage in, yeah, addressing some of those challenges that I think everyday people do face.
Well, how would you describe your own politics within the Uniting Church now that you're its president?
I guess for me, being a leader in the church and even a minister in the church, I do believe that we have a voice. We are a public voice, not only within the church we are part of, but to society. And there's so much of the life of Jesus that we can learn from. That would be my political stance, love over hate, addressing some of the systemic issues where Jesus would often overturn tradition, or when things just weren't right. Jesus spent time with those who are on the margins. And so he would be a voice of advocate and ensuring that people who were unseen were seen by him. And so there's something there about me when I think about the political sphere of today's society. As a leader, for me, it's about, yeah, as I said, say no to violence, love over hate, being a justice-seeking church or leader. So for me, ensuring advocacy for justice is important for me, whatever it might be. And I think what's come closer for me is recognizing too climate change isn't important. So although a lot of my family have already migrated out of Tonga, I still have extended family, but it's more so my husband's family. And so I get to hear from my sister-in-laws and my nieces and nephews the effects of climate change. And so when you hear those personal stories, it becomes real. It makes me pay attention to actually, yeah, be a voice and how we must be advocating, yeah, for those spaces where a voice is needed to bring about change.
That was Uniting Church's Tongan President, Reverend Carissa Sully, the youngest and first person of colour to lead in the top role in Australia. And you heard earlier from Reverend Sonia Hunter and Pastor Susan Kingle in conversation with the ABC's Hilda Wayne. If you missed any part of this episode and you'd like to listen back, you can search for it, Pacific Soul, with me, Melissa Macon, wherever it is that you find your podcasts, or on the ABC Pacific website. This episode was produced on Yuggera and Turrbal country.
For centuries, Pacific Islanders have been sharing stories that connect us across the region. Stories from the Pacific is a weekly program that continues that tradition, bringing you deep and personal stories from a diverse range of people. Athletes, farmers, artists, teachers, activists, entrepreneurs, all united by their Pacific heritage and incredible journeys.
Listen to Stories from the Pacific on your favorite podcast app.